Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AFSCME People, AFSCMEPeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
What's happening, guys? Happy Friday. And thank you for joining me for another special episode of You're Welcome. Guys, UFC 305, it is just one day away. Today, I was just talking to my man, DC. He's out there in Perth. He said that town is popping, and I'm going to discuss the main event. I'm going to talk to you about it from multiple angles, plus Darren Till has some thoughts on the scrap between DDP and Adesanya. Dana White says no to John Jones versus Piera, and of course, I'm going to have some more drama surrounding a certain Irishman. That sounds like a great place to start. Let's begin there. Conor McGregor, guys, there's things that are very out of character here, and I'm only observing them. Like, I don't share an opinion with you strongly that Conor is doing anything wrong. Like, this is a master manipulator, right? Manipulate can be a bad word. It can. But you can assert that with a different word. He's great with the bureaucracy. He's great with the inner workings, with the policy, right? He's great with emotions. He's great with psychology. It's meant to be in a good term. And this is a master at it. There's not words that go out that didn't have a purpose. Even drunk Connor, right? Even late night Connor. It's got a purpose. He was going for something. There's no wasted efforts here. Connor has responded to Dana White. Are you guys up to speed on what Dana said? Dana held a press conference. Dana White Contender Series kicks off. He's sitting down doing a press conference. It had a little bit to do with the Contender Series, and then it was just an opportunity to speak to Dana. It was one of the hottest press conferences that he's held in 2024. It was just one of those moments. The right guys had the courage to ask the right questions, and they caught him in the right mood. And I'm sharing with you, there was a lot of reveals. And one of them was Conor McGregor fighting in 2024, and the answer was no. So Conor responds to that, and he's still politicking for 2024. In fact, he's politicking specifically for December at T-Mobile, which, by the way, is booked, has been revealed to you, the audience, and does not yet have a slated main event. So, and it's next, right? The one before that, for perspective, is November, Madison Square Garden. It has its main event, John Jones and Stipe. So the next big fight that we get will be a main event for that December card. So Conor's maneuvering for it. And when I tell you it's out of character, Conor was very polite. He heard the piece and he says, "Oh, come on, Dana. I'm ready to go. I already got my plans. In fact, training camp starts next week. Like, I'm zero in, I'm planning, I'm moving towards this date. Come on, I want you to reconsider." And that just isn't generally how Conor would do it. Conor has only sold to you, the public, one thing. And when I say sell, Conor has only presented himself in one fashion that was not real. The skills were real. The ability to win championships were real. The courage to go into multiple weight classes was real. The courage to step in there at any time with any opponent, including short nose switches and bad matchup. Like, Chad Mendes is a terrible matchup for Conor. I mean, I'm just sharing for you, but he has demonstrated that he will stay the course. The courage, the wits and the ability to get the attention of Floyd Mayweather. I mean, everything that Conor has told you is real, except one thing, and that's power. He has fainted power for the longest time, where I have heard our own media members come out and say, well, you know, Conor's got all the power. Like, I've heard them say that. And the reason I take the time to explain that to you is generally the way Conor would have handled this. Had Dana made this statement and Conor then got this information, generally, Conor would have responded in a way where it was his idea. He would have responded something along the lines of, talk to Dana this morning, let him know I'm not going to do the December show. Something along those lines. He would not do it and reveal to you, the audience, that the decision being made is opposite of his wishes. Quite frankly, I kind of like it. I find it to be more sincere. I find it to be more honest and humble. It breaks character, and it goes into Conor, the human being, who still has the eye of the tiger. He still has that. And the Conor story has been greatly lost, even in the buildup for Chandler on the fight that we thought was going to happen on June 29th. Like, the buildup of that never talked about the one question that this fight has. It's got no belt. It's got no ranking. It has no meaning. It has no meaning. And even if you want to say, well, no, hey, Conor's still meaningful and Chandler is still meaningful, I understand that. They weren't fighting at their weight class. So it would have no effect. Okay, but there was a question. Can Conor come back? Of all the things that he's done, of all the toughness that he had, he can move up to a new weight class of 155, where at least in theory he's undersized because he's never done it before, and he can deal with Eddie Alvarez in Eddie's backyard, with all the pressure in the world on him of the biggest gate of all time and a debut in New York that was worked on for over 20 years. I mean, that's a lot of pressure for somebody to go out and perform. I would submit for you it was his best performance ever. And he still got that. And the whole question is, can he come back from this injury? Like, that's been so forgotten. That has been so forgotten, right? Even by guys like me. I feel that I tell the Conor story more accurately than most, but even I'm sitting giving him a hard time about a discolored pinky toe, which may or not be broken. It may or not even belong to him. I give him a hard time about that, but the reality is he had one of the worst injuries our sport has seen. I don't know of one that's worse. Personal opinion, I don't know of one the worst. I know some equals. Chris Weidman, just for example, Corey Hill, I know some equals. But I don't know one that's worse, and now he's got to come back. And when he comes back, he's got to do it in a five-round atmosphere against a killer. Michael Chandler, at a worst in this organization, has been a number one contender. Michael Chandler, at a best, if you want to recognize it, is a multiple-time world champion. All right. Can he do it? Can he find that? Can he come back? I don't know the work ethic in the gym. We're not hearing a lot of reports on that. Even when I see the tweet by Conor, he's gonna go to altitude. Like, that bothers me. That doesn't make me happy. It doesn't make me happy when I see a guy leave his gym. I don't buy into the idea that he's going to go and work harder. I haven't personally witnessed that. If you really buckle down and you're really focused, you would go and do with those that got you there in the first place. There would not be a leave to go to altitude where you're out by yourself. No, accountability is being here. It's being with your coaches. It's being where Kavanaugh can see you. It's being where your teammates and friends know if you're showing up on time. It's just one of these situations. But the fact that Conor did plan a camp, whether I like that strategy or not, it speaks to the eye of the tiger. The idea that Conor would come out breaking character and revealing something he would never do in his career, which is his wishes are not being met. And we would do that publicly and ask you guys. He asked you guys to ask Dana. I mean, by Conor standards, that is as humble as he's ever been. But I will just tell you, on a human level, I like it because that is a human. It's one thing that gets lost. It's one thing that gets lost in the money and the stardom and the opportunities. That's a person who had an injury, and he's coming back, and I've never been through that. I can generally personalize for you guys and share, at least from my experience, what something is like, what a guy is up against. I've never been up against that. And Connor trying to do it sooner, trying to get it done now. I don't know what the alternative is, right? Like by example, Dana and Connor have not gone at each other. This is not anything that shows us the relationship is harmed. It's a simple date. Is he going to get put on or not? And the answer is being told no. And the reason I share that, if he's being told no for December, generally speaking at the UFC, he would be told yes for a different date. No, we can't do December. We can put you here. What do you think of that? Then the ball's in your court. Then all of a sudden, this becomes a problem. And everybody's scratching their head going, why? Why would it be a problem? We can't do this one. We don't want to do this one. We can do this one. We want to do this one. Why can't we all just agree on this? It's one of those spots, but it's MMA. It's what the job and what the business is. I don't know what else is being offered to him. I would guess for you that I am right, though. I would guess if he's being told to do December and they're having a back and forth and they're having a conversation and they all agree on one paramount issue, which is we are going to main event Connor. We are going to bring him back. We have the weight class. As a matter of fact, we've even got the opponent. My guess is that something is being presented to him, if I'm right. And if he is sincere and he would like to get back in there, let's not go back and forth on dates. Hey, we all got a date that we can agree on. This could be done. Let's get it done. And as far as going to altitude, whatever that means, and doing a training camp and preparing for December, hey, these are good things, right? If you feel that that is what you need to do to be prepared, I mean, the best way to be ready is to stay ready. I support that. I don't want any dates that he's not getting to interfere with the training. I think that's a mistake. And I think Connor does do better on a human level when he is focused and driven towards something. Some guys have shared that with us. BJ Penn, Volkanovski, they've shared it openly, but everybody goes through it, whether they say it or not. I like the idea of Connor. I like the humbleness of Connor. I found it to be very honest. But if I'm right, and for me to be wrong would be changing 20 years of the same way they do business. If I'm right, then we do have a date. We do have a place we can do this if everybody just puts their swords down and says, okay. So Connor, please, as a fan, I want to watch you fight. I want to see you and Chandler. Please, put the swords down. Let's agree on a date. Conor McGregor, your time in the octagon will come to an end. You will soon be a distant memory. You have vastly overestimated your importance to this game for a decade. That was Michael Chandler. Posted that on social media. Now, is that Michael Chandler moving on? Is that Michael Chandler getting aggressive? I feel that Michael Chandler is in a position to feint tremendous power. He didn't have that. Michael Chandler had to get knocked around. He had to get knocked around. I'll let you know when the date is. I'll let you know if the date is going to come. By the way, feel free to go and do something else anytime you want. If you do make that choice, I will never talk about you again. You and I on the same docket will be this. So now you got Chandler locked into it. Okay, I won't talk about anybody else. I'm going to be laser focused, and this is what I want. And by the way, I'll let you know the weight class. I'll let you know everything. And Chandler was more than happy to play along and go, okay. Now that was as a way of letting him know, if I'm not going to flinch, you're not going to get away from this. I will go anywhere, and I will follow you anywhere. That was the effort. But over a period of time, it was very clear who was pulling the strings and who was dancing to it. Now, one thing that Connor has always done so well is to get information before you guys have it and then come out with a narrative himself so that it then has the appearance that he is the one that controlled those decisions, even though the decisions were made by someone else, right? But Connor's always been a master of it. He's been a master of feinting power. He'll tell a guy right to his face in front of the world and everyone, this is your time to dispute this. I'm your daddy. You do what I say. You will get on your knees and you will beg me. That is your time to dispute it. Now, even if none of it's true, he has caught you off guard. And so you don't dispute it. And the cameras go off and the piece gets put out. And there is Connor once again, feinting power. It's a great move. It's one of the great things that he's done. I will only share for you, I believe Michael Chandler is now in that spot. And it's not that Chandler has the power, neither did Connor. I'm saying he's in the spot to make the other one believe you're going to dance to me. You're going to be forgotten in me. You're going to retire. You're going to leave. You've overestimated yourself. You're going to come to me. You're going to crawl to me. I'm going to be here and you're going to be gone. You got to understand, Michael Chandler can say and do anything he wants. And this is the one thing that Chandler is finally realizing this. I can do and say anything, right? This is the oldest story in the world of Adam and Eve. Just don't eat the fruit from this tree. Chandler can do anything. He can speak in any way. He does not need to be nice. He does not need to be polite. He does not need to agree on any weight classes. He can do anything except eat the fruit from the tree. And what is it in this case? Take another fight. The only way Conor McGregor will be released from the obligation of fighting Michael Chandler in Conor McGregor's very next fight, the only way, is if Chandler takes another fight. Then the deal is off. But that is the only thing that kills the deal. Now, it is true, Chandler might not get that fight. He might be waiting another 5 years and end up looking like a fool, but that isn't the criteria I laid out for you. If Conor fights again, his next opponent will be Michael Chandler. There will be no exceptions made. But that deal is off if Michael Chandler chooses to take another fight. Now, it might be Chandler, and it might be somebody else, but it will not be locked in. And Conor is asking to fight. He does want to fight. We've not had a situation like this in UFC history. Anytime we've had anything that even resembles trying to get a fight together that's not coming together, it has not only gotten publicly and ugly, it's gotten there within a minute. There is no downtime, and that's just not what happened. Dana White is simply not upset with Conor McGregor. He's just not. And he is not accusing Conor of being the one to hold up the fight. Conor McGregor wants something different than what Dana is doing, but Conor has not gotten upset with Dana. He has not said anything along these lines. He has not made any threats. Michael Chandler appears to not have as much inside scoop as I think many times we think. I don't know that there is big of a behind-the-scenes conspiracy as many have believed. I think it's pretty straightforward of just trying to get guys to come together. And they do agree on some parts. They do agree this is the opponent, this is the weight class, it's going to be five rounds, it's going to be their unified rules, it's going to be in this organization. Like, they do have a lot of the same parts there. But the story of Conor McGregor, for the entire career of Conor McGregor, has been misunderstood, and the story is currently being mistold. I am in support of Michael Chandler continuing to mistell it, because I also believe there is a sincerity that Conor McGregor would like to do this again. And therefore, Michael now has the power. That's it. Every relationship, from personal to business, one person will care more, and that person is at a disadvantage. The person who cares less, and I'm not saying you're careless, I'm saying that you care less, that person now has the power. And I'm only sharing for you that I do take Conor at his word. I believe Conor wants to fight in December. I believe Conor wanted to fight June 29th. I believe Conor was open to rushing this thing and getting in there for UFC 300, of which was impossible due to a deal that the UFC had made publicly with USADA, which was, you have a bylaw, and we're just not going to contest it. We're going to do it the way that you want, even though you're gone. We're still going to follow that. We're not admitting that you're interpreting that right, which in my own opinion, I don't believe USADA did interpret that right. I'm talking about the six-month return rule. I don't believe they did interpret that right. But they still said it's what they want to do, and the UFC still said, and that's what we're going to do, not because we agree. That is what we're going to do. So I'm sharing with you that Conor's hands really were clean, and that's part of the story that's getting mistold. But I'm all for Chandler taking his shot and continuing to mistell it. Chandler can do anything he wants. He realized, I don't have to be nice. I don't have to be anything. The only thing I have to do is not take another fight. Conor can talk about other guys. I'm talking about Chandler, rather. He can do interviews on other guys. He can get an angle going with somebody else. The deal and the policy that if Conor returns, he will do it opposite Chandler and absolutely nobody else is very firm. It's very firm. And there's only one thing that we'll get you off it. That is Chandler saying, I'm done waiting. Give me another opponent. I realize I've repeated that, but you need to understand that message because this is what Chandler is now starting to understand. He started to tell Connor and he's starting to speak about Connor in past tense. He's starting to threaten Connor and tell him that he does not have a legacy around here, that he will be forgotten, that he will be a distant memory, that he's overestimated himself in the first place. This is great. This is really, really great stuff. And there are a number of people that would finally come to Chandler and go, yeah, you're right. Hey, by the way, nobody really wanted to see this fight in the first place. There are a number of people that would do that. You just get stopped because we have evidence of a $25-plus million gate. Apparently, it's not accurate. Apparently, people still really do want to see Conor McGregor. But I am sharing with you, if it came to an end, if it was over, the story would be mistold. It would be mistold if you don't understand that Conor is trying to fight. He, I believe, is very sincere in wanting the December date. I believe he was very sincere in the June 29th date. Now, to pull out of a fight for a discolored pinky toe, which may or may not be yours, I mean, it's one of those tough spots. How bad do you really want it, right? It's one of those things that you can feel free to ask. But I do think Chandler is going about it the right way. I think he does realize I don't have to be nice to him. He's not going anywhere else. He can't go anywhere else. As a matter of fact, Mr. Powerful is begging for a date. And he's being told publicly no. It's a very different approach. We had never seen Connor on the back foot. No one could put him there. But they didn't put him there not because they didn't have the wits. Chandler has the wits. And Chandler had a plan. He was going to bring that plan out at a press conference in Ireland that ended up getting canceled. So we don't actually know what Michael had up his sleeve. But he's got something. And he's got a plan, and he's starting to fold it out. He's now done two interviews. See, nobody's put Connor on the back foot, not because they weren't good enough. Chandler is good enough. Not because he's not smart enough. Chandler is smart enough. They haven't done it out of a fear. That fear created a respect. And the fear and the respect is Connor coming out and saying, you talked to me wrong, the whole thing's off. And you know I got the power to do it. I don't need you. This fight doesn't involve you. It involves me. This is my fight card, my gate, my fans, and I will pick a different partner. Connor has told people that before. And people have very quickly gotten into line, and that includes Chandler. That's true. That includes Chandler. But Mr. Nice Guy appears to have left town. And I am very interested in what Chandler's going to do next and how Connor's going to respond. John Jones absolutely will not be fighting Alex Pierre. This news comes out. Now, I don't know if there's a case study that is either being rewritten or misunderstood more than John Jones' current stage of his career. And I don't believe that John understands it. John genuinely has his motivations and reason for fighting. And they're not as simple as you might think, which is championships and money. It's not as simple as that. And I know this because I know the wrestler's mindset. I know all of the matches and championships he pursued and all of the work that he put in when there was no shot of any money. I know that intrinsic value of being told by those around you, good job, you're the guy. And as simple as that might sound, that is all the greats need. As simple as that might sound, and the Olympics being 1 week ago will remind you of that, because that is all that they got. And they put their entire lives on hold to get that. The greats do not need a giant carrot dangled in front of them. Big, beautiful contracts. I'm sharing this with you because John's in a position where he feels he's being questioned. He can't figure it out. I haven't lost. The champion of two different divisions. I haven't lost. How are people questioning me? The part that John is forgetting. This was his wish. John set out with a plan 4 years ago. And that plan was very risky. It involved trying to win a world championship. And what he was willing to do to try to win that world championship is to give back a world championship. Could you even imagine being so good at something that you could give world titles away? Could you even imagine that concept? Like that would be your life accomplishment, right? And is foremost. He was so above even the rare few that get there that he handed one back. But the reason he did it is you guys were no longer questioning him. And he wanted that. He liked being questioned. You guys, when he would walk into buildings, didn't have an anticipation for the main event because you didn't know which way it was going to go. He liked that. He preferred it when you did. Because when the whole thing was over, if you don't have either of those two ingredients, you would lose the ability to tell somebody, great job. That was awesome. Well done. And that is what he really wants. So he gives the title back. He takes 3 years. He puts on size. He comes into the division and takes on the guy that was the next best thing to Francis, which is who he thought he was going to fight. All right, he goes out and he walks through him and he makes it look easy. And then he turns to you guys, like every other fighter does, and says, what's the one? What's the one that you want to see? Now, he doesn't reveal to you as openly and tell you, because I would like you to tell me good job when it's done. I would like for somebody to think that I put effort in and took a big risk. He doesn't tell you that. He just says who's next, knowing that you would give him the hardest name. So you give him the guy that they say is the greatest heavyweight in UFC history. And Stipe is certainly one of them, but people say that there was some stat that Stipe has. And I believe it was the most title defenses. And it was something small. It was only like two or three. But because of that, right? And it's what you guys said. I'm reminding you what you said. You tell John that's the guy. John signs a contract to fight that guy. Somewhere along the way, Stipe is no longer your answer. In fact, if you could rewind to where you said, Stipe, if you could rewind the tape and be able to give your answer, you would have changed it to Sergey Pavlovich. And I watched the news go around, and I watched all the guarantees and promises by everybody, including fighters and coaches and managers, that John would retire before he ever fought Sergey. John will do anything he can to avoid Sergey Pavlovich. And that in an instant by Tom Aspinall was turned off. That was turned off, and Tom was inserted. And there wasn't a lot that John could do about it. Because he's got a contract to fight the guy who he initially asked you. Who did you want? Who is my biggest challenge? He's got a contract. You've got to see that through. So somewhere along the way of it being Tom Aspinall, Alex Pereira gets announced. And when Pereira gets announced, it's an interesting spot because Tom is actually busy. Tom's got Curtis Blaydes, and without knowing the outcome of that match, it added a little bit of steam to Pereira, not to mention that would just be a dream fight to start with. So then when Tom's dance card becomes available again, for about a week it was all Tom, and then it started to come back to a little bit of Alex Pereira. And this topic starts to be out there, but the bottom line is you now have three guys the world wants to see John fight. And you're not putting none of you that have publicly said, Pereira, put him against Jones, or Tom Aspinall, put him against Jones. None of you are doing that from a perspective, I think that's a great fight. None of you did it from a perspective of, I like John so much, I would like everybody to see how good he is. And I think he can showcase that against these guys. You put those guys in there because you think they can beat him. That's what this was about. That's okay. You don't need to apologize for that. But that's the part where John has forgotten. That's what John wanted. John right now is getting exactly what he wanted. The entire reason he went into this division was to have guys and have challenges that would give a perception to the audience of danger, of a threat. So now John's in the position, he's getting very frustrated. He's getting very frustrated that the athletes that people are saying they want to see John with is not the athlete they initially said. Oh, and by the way, it's not the athlete that he's going to face next. I do think that there is a small amount of legs, and it's small, but it's out there, for Pereira versus Tom Aspinall. That's the one that you guys also want to see, but you're getting distracted and you don't understand that's the one that's actually available. So when you're talking about Pereira versus John Jones, the fact that Dana had to answer a question, if Pereira would be fighting John Jones, John Jones has a contract with Stipe. If you look at the two guys that are available, you do have Pereira and Tom. You would be very lofty to believe that you're going to get John Jones three more times. You've gotten John Jones one time in 4 years. It would be very lofty for you to believe you're going to get him three more. That you're going to get him Stipe, you're going to get him Pereira, you're going to get him Aspinall. And boy, after that, the book's written as though somebody else isn't still coming up. What I'm sharing for you, you're also going to get John more than once, right? I don't think you're going to get him three. I can guarantee him you get him more than once. So what am I saying? You're going to get him twice. You're going to get him twice, and he's going to call it a career. Where you get it wrong is that you're being disrespectful to Stipe. That when you're talking about what's next for John, we're going to put Pereira and Aspinall together. That's where I was going with that. If you're going to get John twice and you can't get him with all three, you have these guys fight, he takes on the winner, right? Like, that's the way that is done. Very, very small legs, but not an issue that's dead. Pereira versus Aspinall is not an issue that's dead. I just want to remind you of that. And the reason it's so important, winner takes on John Jones. And before you think you created a problem by saying that, or you've disrespected Stipe, or counting out Stipe's chances, no, you're not understanding. Stipe's retiring after the fight. Let's just say for fun that you did Pereira and Aspinall, and the winner is going to take on John Jones. You don't say the winner is going to take on John or Stipe. No, it's still John Jones. If John wins, he's a champion. Of course, he's going to fight. Who's next? If John loses, Stipe retires, belt becomes vacated, John fights for the belt next. Either way, any way you want to do it, any outcome you get, the only thing that you can be assured of is John Jones's next two fights, which I assure you, you will get, are both going to be for the world championship. Any athlete who competes at the highest level will tell you the importance of having a great team. Even in individual sports like boxing, wrestling, MMA, there is always a team of coaches and training partner who helped you get to the top. Think about Simone. Think about Serene. Think about Tiger. Think about Mike Tyson, Mayweather. They all have a coach. And the same thing goes with business. You need a solid team of trusted and knowledgeable people to help you advance if you're in the e-commerce business. Let Shopify be that teammate that helps you level up. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going through. Businesses that sell more, sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/chale, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/chale, like the famous gangster, to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/chale. Any athlete who competes at the highest level will tell you the importance of having a great team. Even in individual sports like boxing, wrestling, MMA, there is always a team of coaches and training partner who helped you get to the top. Think about Simone. Think about Serene. Think about Tiger. Think about Mike Tyson, Mayweather. They all have a coach. And the same thing goes with business. You need a solid team of trusted and knowledgeable people to help you advance if you're in the e-commerce business. Let Shopify be that teammate that helps you level up. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going through. Businesses that sell more, sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/chale, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/chale, like the famous gangster, to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/chale. Men, when we leave the house It's phone, wallet, keys, and how does my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss like the majority of the male population does, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that actually work, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized, chewable oral spray and serum treatment options so you can find what works best for you. Reaching out for help in this area can feel a bit embarrassing, but Hims has made this process so dignified and simple. All you have to do is answer a few questions online and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. No in-person visits to the doctor or pharmacy are needed. The whole process is 100% online. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get that confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/chale. That's Hims. HIMS.com/chale, like the famous gangster. For your personalized hair loss treatment options, HIMS.com/chale. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information. Sean Strickland is next for the world title. He will take on the winner of Adesanya Du Plessis. This was made very clear by Dana. And quickly, the comments and quickly, the headlines came out that Whitaker and Chimaev is no longer a number one contenders match. And I just want to pump the brakes a little bit. You're interpreting that wrong. Both can be true. Now, there is a formula at the UFC, whether it's stated or not, that if you go back and you follow the time frames, Sean Strickland being announced the number one contender and being announced as the guy that will face the winner of the main event this Saturday. This is perfectly in line with how things are done. There is nothing off here. It does not take away, and I just read comments, and it's a misunderstanding, and it does surprise me when veterans of this sport miss this, when they don't look to history as the greatest trajectory to the future. I always miss it. So, okay, you got a world title fight, just so I can explain this to you. You have a world title fight coming up this Saturday. What's on the line? This is the most personal feud I have ever seen, no matter how short it is, right? I've seen one, Michael Chandler, Conor McGregor. This one's going on 2 years. Length doesn't change it. The heat on this, a white man from Africa, a black man from Africa, and the white man is claiming that he is the true African. Do you realize I am the only one that has explained that to you? Do you realize that topic feels like a landmine for people? But it's that hot. I can't really think of any. I'm trying. If I was just to be creative, if this was a movie and I was writing a script so I could go off course, I could go off rules, I'd have no boundaries. I don't think I could write anything as hot as what I just said. Okay, world championship. Okay, comeback of Izzy. Like, we've got all of these pieces. We're missing one thing. Like, if we want a grand slam, we got a home run right now, but if we want a grand slam, what are they fighting for is also who's going to draw into, and to answer that question, you got to have a number one contender. That should be, and the rankings support, and this answer is right, Sean Strickland. So I'm just adding for you, history of the UFC. Got a title fight on Saturday. Prior to that, you announce who they draw into. Possibly you could do a face-off. Possibly you could get something organic there. Possibly you could start getting the press going in that direction. But this is all in line. There is nothing out of order here. Now, save that thought. Look down the road. Whitaker Chimaev, which according to articles and comments has just been demoted, is no longer a number one contenders fight. That's not correct. That's just not what happened. The announcement of Sean Strickland being next, the calendar lines up and supports this. Guys, you got to understand, in this sport, the number one requirement is damage. So if you take that for what it is, you're going to assume that after Whitaker Chimaev, those guys are going to be banged up and need a little bit of time. So this is where Sean starts to come in. Now, of course, you don't know what's going to happen Saturday. We always have an asterisk next to every single comment of who's next. There's always an asterisk for when the title fight itself goes off. If something happens that warrants a rematch, and we know we're going to rematch them. 99% of the time, and the only 1% is because of an injury. So barring injury, 99% of the time, when we know we're going to rematch them, we do it immediately. We don't put something in front of it. No, now we're going to get these guys back together, have them go do this first. It doesn't work that way. It goes immediately. So now you don't have to have an argument. Strickland would go and fight the winner of Whitaker Chimaev. And one thing about this sport, it's why this is so important from a promotional standpoint. It's why it's so important and so helpful. I was really surprised when I saw comments taking that announcement as a demotion to Whitaker Chimaev. That is simply not what happened. Here's the deal. In this game, whatever you bring is on the line. All the chips are in. I came from a wrestling background, guys. That's not true. You win the Olympic championship, take a little break, get back into a couple of tournaments. It wouldn't matter how small they were in comparison to the Olympics. It wouldn't matter. You go out there, you start feeling out, start getting ready for whatever is next in your mind. That Olympic championship isn't on the line. You're a world champion within wrestling, the sport I came from. Each match you have, the world championship is not on the line. So in MMA, it's very different. Whatever you got is up for grabs. So let's just say you have a champion. His next fight, we don't need to discuss. We don't need to worry or wonder if his next fight will be for the world championship. Yes, it will be. And I know that seems obvious to you guys. I know that seems obvious, but that's the part that you're missing. Everything's a title once it becomes official. Sean Strickland is now the number one contender. You will not see a headline. After that statement, an appointment by Dana, you will not see a headline that mentions Sean Strickland and doesn't mention number one contender. That is a title, and it is his. And where that becomes relevant is, say something were to happen with Adesanya and Duplessis where we got to have a rematch, or that it delayed one of those guys, right? Say there's an unforeseen that happens. This happens in our sport every week to somebody. So it's a very realistic scenario. All right, great. Well, now if Whitaker Chimaev, winner, ends up getting on the docket with Sean Strickland, we don't have a conversation about number one contenderships. It's much like having a title fight. Sean Strickland would have the title of number one contender. That would be on the line. Are you following me with the importance of this? This is a very helpful thing to Whitaker versus Chimaev. Not to mention, it's down the road a little bit, right? I mean, that's down the road. You got to deal with that a little bit later. You could establish a number one contender there. Strickland's next, and the winner, we've seen that. That's a very new thing that started in 2023. Very new, where we would have two number one contenders at a time. We have two guys that are promised final fights, and we're going to hold them, and this guy's going to fight, and then this guy's going to come in next. It's a bit of a logjam, but it's a new concept. And when you have as many guys that have emerged and you have as many events, it becomes a necessity at times. And I really just want to point that out for you. This is the right move. It's the right move, guys. Why have rankings? Why have a ranking system if we're not going to observe them? Sean Strickland, in any ordinary circumstance, would have gotten a rematch right away with Duplessis, but it was not an ordinary circumstance because the GOAT of 185 pounds was waiting in the wings, and he too could have cashed in and gone for an immediate rematch. And if Strickland had the belt, that's exactly what Adesanya would have done. Adesanya qualified, and we all have to agree to this, for a world title fight. It happens to be against Du Plessis. That is not a side to Strickland. That's the part that guys have a hard time seeing through. Hey, what about me? What about this? You're missing. It's larger than that. It's for the belt. That's where Adesanya comes in. If you had the belt, you would be getting this. So don't act as though you're somehow being slighted. You're not. It's not about you. It's bigger than that. It's the championship, and right now, you ain't got it. I share it from that perspective with you. It's a big deal. Sean Strickland's the right guy. It got announced. We really didn't have to wait this long, quite frankly. Sean Strickland, the night he beat Paulo Costa, that was the test. He becomes the guy. But you can't announce it that night because it wasn't made official yet that Adesanya's got Du Plessis and that's the fight that's going to happen. So then it's just confusing. Sean's the guy. Sean's done it. Sean is definitely the guy. But Izzy's going to do it and then Sean will do it. You just lose people. So you wait. You wait. You do things in the correct order. But I don't want. See, I'm so proud of Robert Whittaker. Weird word to use, right? But I'm so proud of him for taking this fight with Chimaev. And I loved his strategy and I love his thought process. This was his idea. He wanted to have it. He knew he became the number one contender. In fact, the reigning champion, Du Plessis, also looked at that and said, yes, there would be no way to deny that. That would be the number one contenders match. And it still can be, is what I'm sharing for you. You can have multiple things that are accurate at the same time, but it could confuse the audience, which is the very reason that Sean Strickland, the night he became Paulo Costa and became, okay, his next fight's going to be for the title. It doesn't get announced. It can't. There's an order. And if it would have been announced, and then you're trying to explain that Izzy's next, you go, wait a minute, number one contender means next, and you would lose everybody. So you got to do it in an order. There was nothing about the announcement of Sean Strickland, which was the right announcement. There was nothing about that that affected Robert Whittaker and Chimaev's plan. There was also nothing about that announcement that affects Robert Whittaker and Chimaev's opportunity. And when you thought otherwise, you misunderstood. The shocking is real. The shocking, the cattle prod, the taser, it's real. Trinkus Du Plessis did an interview on this. He told an entire story that, quite frankly, he is not creative enough to make up. He talked about the first day that this came along. He talked about the coach zapped himself and realized, that's a bit of a nuisance, but it's not much. Give me a proper taser. Went out and upgraded the son of a bitch to the point that now he's at a cattle prod. Told the whole story. Said, hey, you don't just walk around and get zapped. Coach tells you it's the third time. You get a warning. You get a secondary warning. And the third one, you get a zap on the right foot. He even had the body part and it was down specific. Now, I will tell you, my message is not to give a hard time to the coach. I mean, I heard from the team, right? I'm not in there. So I'm now going to have to take the team and the troops. They had a great attitude about it. They like it. They think it's helpful. They found it to be a helpful reminder. And the coach, by the way, has a world champion. Like, there's something about it that has worked. And every gym where you have greats, where you have a great coach, all of them, there is something that's different. They have something. Roy Pittman out here in Oregon, just for example, who has created Olympians. 53 years, he has not missed practice. That's his something. Consistency is his something that no other coach can match. So I'm just sharing with you by example. Like it's not always when I say something different, something that you might perceive as a negative, but there is something. And it concerns me only fundamentally that when you have a coach who is one of the elite, who has a world champion. Do you know how uncommon that is? If you're a coach and you get a fighter to a world title fight, you have more than done your job. You have succeeded in ways that most would just be envious of. If you win that world championship, right? Because now you're returning to main events. Now you have another world title fight, even if it's within the same guy. It's just awesome. I do want to say that about him. I have not met the man, but you would not think of, is it Pretoria? Am I saying that right? Pretoria, South Africa, as a place of a real highlight for gyms? But apparently it is. And here's the evidence and here's the proof. And I got to say that because I don't want to compare him to Uday Hussein. But I do want to discuss the topic. Because Uday Hussein, I mean, the very first thing we did when we liberated Iraq is we freed the athletes. And Uday Hussein had his personal involvement was with the soccer team. The Iraqi soccer team is not known for winning very many games. That's just the reality. But Uday did not understand how to play soccer. He did not understand strategies and he did not understand techniques. He understood drive. And a way to give somebody drive is through the threat of bodily harm. And the way you get the rest of the guys to believe that that threat is real, right? I mean, it's the art of war. The art of war is not only having a weapon the other guy can't stop. You have to make the other guy believe you are willing to use that weapon. So his way of doing that was to go ahead and apply torturous tactics to teammates while everybody stood and watched him scream in pain. If a guy was missing a ball, one of Uday's reported moves was to put his leg in a vise and crank the vise until the bones would begin to break. Oh, and then by the way, he's not now off the team. He's got to go back into the game. And you see where that's insane? I mean, you see where that is truly insane. And not from a standpoint of what a mean thing to do to somebody else. It's insane from a standpoint that if you're the leader, your job, aside from motivating them and getting them to do the right techniques, is to have those right techniques and be able to articulate it to the troops. It is a massive deflection. If you have a team that you're in charge of that is doing the skills that you provided and they are not doing it well enough, the immediate and obvious conclusion is that you got to go look at the man in the mirror and realize your moves and techniques are not good enough or your explanation of those moves and techniques are not being done well enough. So in fighting, if a guy is trapped in a situation and he's not getting out of it, you could come and zap him. You could. But the message is now that you're not doing your part. Well, what if he is? What if he is doing exactly what he's been shown to do? And there's one of two cases. One, he either wasn't taught that position, or two, the techniques that you taught him are not working. The situation would always fall to the coach. I don't need to zap the son of a bitch. I need to keep him after practice. And I need to show him the importance of pressure on the knee. I've got to show him the importance of bringing your hips through. I've got to show him the effectiveness of getting an underhook while keeping your head up, just for example. So what if it was a position that you had not worked on? Do you take that into consideration? Like when you yell to the guy to get out of there, you yell a second time, and you're not seeing the effort and you're not seeing the mobility. Is that when you get zapped? Because that, I got to tell you, I could drink to. If the effort isn't there and it's a little drive and motivation because you're tired or not feeling good or feeling sorry for yourself and you show the guy, no, you will recover. No matter how tired you are, no matter how bad you feel, you will recover. So you're going to put the effort in this situation. Whether it works or not, you're going to put the effort. I'm not seeing effort. And here's your reminder. That I could tip my cap to. But is that assessment done? Do you look at that and realize, wait a minute, we covered that on Wednesday. He wasn't here on Wednesday. His mother was sick and he stayed home. Does that get taken into account? I'm just purely wondering, right? Because I can tell you with Uday, it was not. It was not a matter of we sat down and we reviewed this on film and you knew that this was coming and you should have gone right, but you went left. It wasn't a matter of that. There was no technique shown. There was no display shown. It was purely an effort issue, which in the game of soccer, and as tactical it is simply not true. It is a game of moves. It is a game of chess. If you play soccer on recess when you're 8 years old and somebody throws a ball out there and blows a whistle as a way of keeping kids busy, and that is your extent in soccer, you would not know that. You would not know the strategies and the plays and the communications. You would not be aware of those things. So I think I just want to speak more to the idea that there are definitely times where a coach has to know, I have not done a good enough job at showing this. Or I look around the room, there's not one guy stuck in this spot. There's only 10 guys here, and I've seen 4 people stuck in this spot. Guess what we're going to work on tomorrow? That would be a very common way to do it. But you could also get ahead of that and make sure the deflection does stay off yourself if you put it onto the athlete and the athlete alone. And if you did that in the form of sticking his leg in a vice or hitting his right foot after 3 warnings with a cattle prod. The approach to a fight reveals almost everything. And Israel Adesanya has to have an ingredient, right? Everybody needs something. Israel has got to have a personal problem. He has to. It drives him and motivates him more than money, more than championship. That has been proven. One of the great case studies, if you want us to understand Israel Adesanya, was him fighting Yoel Romero. Yoel was coming off a loss and was not the guy. Not to mention, he's an Olympic wrestler from Cuba taking on a tall, skinny kickboxer from New Zealand. Like, this is the world's worst matchup. He's not going to make a lot of money. There's not going to be a lot of press. That's not a fight people are dying to see. And he's likely going to hand over his title. Like, if we've learned anything since 1993, and he demanded it. He told Dana, I don't care about his ranking and his law. I got into this sport because there's some guys I want to fight. And don't let my championship hold me back from my dreams, right? This is what he had to tell Dana. Don't let my success hold me back from what I want to do. I want to fight him. You don't think he qualifies for a title fight? Don't put the title up. Give me him. Dana, nobody ever said this to Dana before. That made sense. To Dana, that made sense. He gave him the fight. But you have to understand that fight or you will not get Israel Adesanya. You will not get it. When you look at his fight with Sean Strickland, and so many want to give an analysis, go, hey, what went wrong that night? What was different that night? I found out Israel had a couple of beers a couple weeks before. I guess his head wasn't in the game. No. You don't know if Israel had beers before his other fights. You don't know anything about that. What you do know is he never had a personal problem with Sean Strickland. He wanted one. He tried to get it, but he just didn't. Not to mention Sean was ranked number 6. They had not gone outside of the top 5 for a title challenger in a period of time. It was a short notice fight. Israel was a 6-1 favorite in his backyard against a guy not in the top 5. Who, by the way, lost to a common opponent just recently in Piera. And who, by the way, wasn't the scheduled opponent. And Israel wanted to get upset. He wanted to get mad. He tried to work himself up. He couldn't get there. It wasn't real. It wasn't there. It was the ingredient that was missing. As a matter of fact, Israel was offered a rematch with Sean Strickland. That's the fight that Dana went with. Before we ever had the Chimaev and Kamaru number one contenders match, before we insert DDP. And Izzy said no. And it wasn't a lack of competitor in him. It wasn't being tired with the sport. He didn't have a problem with Sean. He didn't want to fight Sean. He didn't want to not fight him. He didn't want to fight me. He needs that. Everybody needs something. And I'm sharing that with you, right? Like you've got to understand what was on the line the night that Izzy took on Yoel. That was not a huge fight. Like of the numbers Izzy done, that one is near the bottom. I think it is the absolute last for title fights that he's ever had. But it's near the bottom. It just wasn't the fight that people wanted to see. That's where I tell you that everything was to be risked. Everything. But he did not care. That is not what it's about for him. That night. And he proved it. It's not just something you say to sound like a scary guy. Sound like you're Kaiser Swarce. He went out and did it. And never even got credit for it. He would fight Duplessis. I firmly believe. They don't have to bring in the belt. They could scratch the belt still. DDP could miss weight and it's not for the belt. Izzy would show up. Just by example, I'm sharing with you, this has what he needs. This has what makes Izzy tick. Izzy while losing decisively and in his own realm of striking to Sean Strickland for 25 minutes. The idea behind that he wasn't there, he wasn't dedicated, I will just share with you, you simply can't go 25 minutes, whether it's favoring the other guy or not. Whether the other guy is putting out a better 25 than your 25, you can't even go the 25. If you're not, folks, if you're not in the gym, you can't switch that one night locker room. I'll go out and do it. It's not like that. You don't have a choice. That preparation is very real. That dedication and those efforts were in there or they weren't. And they were. Even if there was an underperformance, there was an underperformance. You see, it's such a big deal how Izzy worked to get the Yoel fight that no one even knows that story and no one really cares. But that's not why he fights. Those big arenas, they don't affect him. He's got the record. He fought Whitaker in front of 57,000 for his biggest prize ever at that time and won, but it didn't affect him. He didn't feel it. In fact, he even did a dance to the ring with some old junior high buddies. That's not what he's there for. It wasn't about the championship. It's not. It's personal. Fighting is very personal. People will tell you you shouldn't evolve emotion. I don't really know why they say that. I do get some of the down effects to it, but it's not true and it's not real. It's very personal. It's a very personal thing, and finding that right opponent for Izzy isn't about style. It's about, does he want to fight that person? Set the money aside, set the pay-per-views aside, and set the title aside. Does he want to fight that person? That ingredient has to be there, and he's always been careful in his career to make sure that it is. Israel Adesanya, better than anybody, has never left that octagon without letting us all know who's next. Nobody has steered their own career, and I mean, it's not even close. Nobody has steered their own career like Izzy. But the formula is also the same. While he's got the audience and he's got them right in his hand, he tells them. Those headlines and media comes out like the laws of attraction are real. Whether you want to deny the book, The Secret, or not, the laws of attraction are still real. And I'm sharing this with you because you want to know what else? He never called out Sean Strickland. He never said, Sean Strickland, you're next. It was the one break in the style, the one break of the system, the one break in the formula of the great Israel Adesanya. Is Strickland wasn't the guy. It wasn't the guy he identified. It wasn't the guy he challenged. It wasn't the guy that he promised. It was a guy that he agreed to. That's different. It's very different. And I only offer you that because that performance and or that outcome, like there's things that you could point to. There's reasons that you could point there and say, okay, here's what was missing. But it's not missing with DDP. It's there. And there are questions from Izzy, for sure. Turning down the title fight with Sean, taking his time to come back. Not rushing and getting there for 300. Saying at one point that he's done. Don't call me for 5 years. And when I come back, I'm going to box anyway. I mean, it was one of these things where it appeared that he took his oars out of the water. But his teammates, guys like Dan Hooker that see him every day, they tell a different story. It was one about dedication. But there was something that Izzy wants. And there was something that he needs. And he learned that in the Sean Strickland fight. And how good and strong and powerful he is without that ingredient, right? It was his kryptonite. And he wasn't going to come back and he wasn't going to rush and there wasn't any amount of money or any amount of titles. In fact, you can keep the money, you can keep your titles. I need something else. I need a guy that I want to fight. It's exactly what he has in DDP Saturday. Of free advice, Darren Till spoke up. Darren Till gave an analysis that he was not asked for. And that can always be a sticky situation in this regard. If you come out and you give advice to one guy to beat the other guy, you're now favoring that guy against the other guy. There's not like two ways about it. I mean, some guys get scared to come out and give you a prediction. Oh, yeah, you like both guys. I've seen guys in TV. I've seen guys with one of the few jobs where they're wearing the suit and they're standing there and they're getting a paycheck to do it. And they get asked to give a prediction and then don't. Or will actually say, oh, I like both guys. I didn't ask you for a popularity contest, you idiot. Like, not even remotely closely am I vetting it from that perspective. I want to know in an ass-whipping contest, which is what they're about to do, who do you think's going to win? And I mean, it's just one of these things where you have a hard time. Not to mention, picking against a guy doesn't harm your relationship with him. It shows an integrity to the question that you were asked. But this is different. Make no mistake. This draws a line very clearly in the sand. And Darren Till came out with unsolicited advice for Israel Adesanya. And you want to know something about Darren Till? I got to tell you, Darren doesn't like when I break him down. He doesn't like it because I can't cover Darren Till without telling you he hates to fight. Like, he loves everything about fighting. He loves the idea of it, and he loves the environment. He loves the perspective. He despises getting in there with another guy. That upsets him. He gets upset with me. But I wish that he won it because it demonstrates my understanding of Darren Till. And when he came out and he gave this analysis, guys, you want to know something? It was great. And I haven't seen Darren give an analysis for somebody else. I've heard him break down his fights, which you always take with a grain of salt. Okay, is he revealing game plan? Is he not? Is his mind play? And you kind of push it aside. This was different, and this was thought out, and this didn't come from a place of anger. It did make it very clear when he drew a line in the sand, I want Du Plessis to lose to Israel Adesanya. He did make that very clear. So there was a risk that he took. But the analysis that he gave, he's talking about feints. He was talking about feints, which is something that Israel does naturally so well. Adesanya has been misunderstood at points in his career for the same reason in the same way that Anderson was misunderstood for points in his career, for the same reason and the same way that Roy Jones Jr. was misunderstood for his points in career, which was being cocky, which was being disrespectful to your opponent. And that is a mindset. That is not an action. That is a mindset. And that analysis is wrong. All they were doing was trying to set the opponent up. When you do a feint, did you guys ever have a jerk on the school bus? He tell you, two for flinching. He like give you two punches in the shoulder. Did you ever see that? Like that was a fun game to play? But that's a very real thing. That's a very real thing in fighting where you make the person flinch. It doesn't matter how good they are. It doesn't matter how skilled they are. What does end up happening on a human level is you will get used to certain feints. You will get used to head movement. You'll get this hand moving before it comes to this hand. So then you get the guys that are creative, like Adesanya, like Roy Jones, and like Anderson. They will do something else, but it's still just a distraction. It is misunderstood by the audience that it was meant to be arrogant. And the reason I'm telling you that is Darren Till didn't go out and hand Adesanya something that he can't do. Like, that was my big problem with game plans and strategies. It was to the point that it even annoyed me. Hey, look, this guy's wide open for this. Okay, but I don't have the this. I'm not equipped with that skill. So what difference does it make if he's open to it? These are the techniques that I score with. Number one, number two, and number three. Now, you can change that order, and you can say do three before you do one and then go to two, but you can't go and tell me something else. And if we spent a training camp doing it, we both just wasted our time. If I did not learn a technique roughly 10 years ago, I am not going to use it in competition. So if you would like to show me something now and you believe I got a decade left in my career, let's do it and you might see it someday. But that's not what Darren did. Darren handed Israel something that he might not have known strategically. He might not have known that this would be effective or this is an experience that Darren had. And by the way, it happened to be something that Izzy does not only naturally, he does it as good as anybody. The only guys I could compare him to is Roy Jones and Anderson Silva. And that's pretty big compliments, right? So it was a very great analysis by Darren, who really understands this sport and has a seat at the table. He just also hates to do it. Now, I tell you this because he told him to faint. He told Izzy to faint, and he told him what Du Plessis would do. He told him that Du Plessis will back up. He will back up. He'll be on his heels. Which talks about, one, the motion of his body, but two, a lack of power. He's talking about it's going to be flailing a little bit. He didn't have time to put this in the tweet, but that's what that means. And that is what he was telling. That's exactly how Izzy would have heard it. But he says about Du Plessis that he will go back on his heels, that he will react to the feint, but when he reacts, he will defend himself. He will throw. Okay. That is a really big piece of advice. you could sit down and watch tapes to Hell and Gone. There's going to be things that you will not be able to pick up until you see it, until you experience it. Unless somebody else who felt it an experience hands it to you. It's a very big deal. Let's say that Darren Till had this crystal ball and he knew this weapon that Izzy could use to win this fight. But between now and fight time, which is 3 days, two press conferences and a weigh-in, there's absolutely no time. He's got to develop it and learn it. He's got to land it in the fight, right? That would be silly and ridiculous. This is something that Izzy does anyway. Darren's just encouraging him to go out and do it. Go out and use this skill, and here's what to expect. He's going to go backwards on his heels, and he's going to throw something back at you, so make sure that you use your reach. Like, this is a fabulous piece of advice that Izzy does not need to go into the gym and work on. He does not need to go and train it. It's a skill that he's already equipped with. That's what I'm trying to share. I got flinched. I had fought 7 professional fights. This doesn't include my amateur career. And these fights were hard. My very first fight ever was against Mayhem Miller. Somewhere in my first 7, I ended up in the ring twice with Trevor Prang. Like, these were hard and meaningful matches. Get a guy that comes in from Nebraska. His name is Ryan Schultz. He fought under the Lion. It's his nickname. Ryan the Lion Schultz comes in from Nebraska. He was a wrestler. And he was smaller than me. Fought 155 pounds. And this is before he goes on, he becomes the IFL champion and a well-respected coach and a leader. At this point in the story, his name is Ryan, and he's a wrestler from Nebraska. We start sparring, and he would flinch me. He would do these things. He would do these things. He would flinch me like the jerk on the school bus that gives you 2 for flinching. And I would react, and I would close my eyes, and I would freeze, and I'd put my hands up, and even if it was only for an instant, boom, he'd throw something. He would hit me so hard. He would hit me so hard, and I had 7 pro fights. I didn't know what he was doing. I didn't understand. I hadn't met Clayton Hires yet. I had not drilled and worked on these things. I had no experience. Those 7 pro fights I told you I had, well, apparently those guys don't do feints because I had never seen it. I was sparring with him again the next day, and I'm still not aware as to why he's hitting me. So he does this, he does his flinch again. He hits me again. And I got to spar with this guy for weeks before I realize he's hitting me because of my reaction, and I'm reacting that way because he's feinting me. As simple as that might sound, guys, as simple as that might sound, it's a natural human reaction. That's what I'm trying to share with you. Over a period of time, when Chuck Liddell was the champion of the world, he was truly the best fighter in the world. And there was only a couple times in history where you could actually say that, right? You got a title, you got your politics, you got a whole bunch of guys that are working towards it. It's hard to know. You can know who the champion is, but who the best is doesn't always go hand in hand. A couple times in history, Frank Shamrock, Chuck Liddell, for example, truly were the best guys doing the sport at the time that they had the title. And there became an analysis on Chuck Liddell that before he throws that big power, he blinks. And everybody's got a tell. It's not just in poker. Everybody has a tell. If you can identify what it is, it's really helpful. And this analysis came out on Chuck, and it started making its way through the internet. And whether it was accurate or not, I never stood in there with Chuck. I never sparred with Chuck. Whether it was accurate or not, guys began to look for it, and Chuck quit knocking guys out. And I only share that you do have muscle memory. You do have things that you cannot control. It is natural human reaction. You can get better at it. But if a guy does a feint properly, he does something that you're not used to saying, there will be a moment where you become Medusa, you turn the guy to stone, you freeze him, even if it's for an instant. And according to Darren Till, that is a weakness and a trait that Du Plessis has, and it happens to be a massive skill that Adesanya is equipped with. It was a great analysis by Darren. He drew a line in the sand. He took a risk by giving it. But it does make me, the way I'm going to watch and enjoy and even anticipate this fight, now that I have that piece of information, it changes things. All right, everybody, that's it for today's episode, and I want to thank you for listening. And I want to say what is up to Hennessy, who left me a comment on Spotify. Here's what he said. Through all of the years of listening to Chael, I have never once been able to find a shred of inaccurate information. I'm blown away by how humble he is, even though I know the fact that he is the greatest of all time. I appreciate that, Hennessy. It was nice to you to say something nice about me because I would never do it about myself. And you know what, guys? I'm not going to say anything more until we meet again on Tuesday. Have a great weekend. I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.